Hello, this is Mike Harbath with another Shoot the Moon podcast for this week, the last week of April 2021. If you're a regular listener to this podcast, or maybe you're not, you know that Revenue Rocket is the premier growth strategy and M&A advisor for IT services firms worldwide. And today we're here with my partner and esteemed colleague, Ryan Barnett. Ryan, welcome.
Hey, good afternoon, Mike, and thanks for having us here today. And it's been an interesting week. You know, it's the end of a month, and what happens at the end of the month, Mike?
Well, it's deal closing time. And so we've had lots of interesting things going on this week. We thought we'd change it up a little this week and talk a little bit about what's on our minds today, things that are going on today for us in the life of M&A. And then we're going to get into a much more detailed conversation today about how to increase your enterprise value if you're a seller and how deal structures impact enterprise value, and a few other tips to kind of help you optimize your deal. But Ryan, what are you seeing this week that's relevant you want to share with our audience?
I think some of the things that we've seen that have at least been on our radar is that sometimes a deal can get blown up at the last minute simply because of the last 5%. And you know, just want to, in general, when you're looking at a deal, look for the longer term things that are out there. But if you're looking for kind of getting that last quarter of a percent or 1% done, sometimes it's better to look at the bigger picture and kind of move on. So it's something that we've experienced before, and sometimes a deal you can kind of lose the bigger picture when there's a minute thing in front of you.
Yeah, and I guess I would emphasize that, you know, that goes hand in glove with your readiness to do a deal, right? Whether you're a buyer or a seller, you have to be ready. You have to mentally be ready because, you know, getting these deals done is hard. And oftentimes the last week is perceived as the hardest when in many ways it is not. And part of that's because the lawyers are kind of getting down to the short strokes on the agreements. And in the short strokes of the agreements, oftentimes what you're doing is trying to mitigate risk for the wildly unlikely events that could occur. And the nuance of the language around those can be exhausting, right? Because they may have 4, 5, 7, 10 revisions around legalese that for things that have a high probability of never occurring. And we think that we've seen deals get in trouble there when buyers or sellers aren't really committed to the deal or aren't really ready. They just wear down and can't get through that final push, that final turn, kind of sprint to the finish stuff. And it's, to Ryan's point, it's critically important that, you know, you keep that in perspective when negotiating around those deal points. That one, what is the likely, how likely is it this would actually occur? Number one, pretty important. And two, oftentimes the last 5% of the transaction value isn't worth blowing the deal up. You know, you've negotiated 95 or 97 or 99% of it. Don't get augured into, you know, sort of this downside protection mode that throws you into a tailspin to blow up the deal when you're completely not seeing all the upside opportunity and potential as a buyer, or you're at least blinded to it temporarily. Or as a seller, you're forgetting, you know, you're taking your eye off the prize, which ultimately is the monetization in some cases of your life's work.
Absolutely. And I would coach sellers. This is always a tough process. And if you're a buyer, you really have to walk a mile in the seller's shoes and understand that this really is tough. And sometimes what might be a small issue to you could be something huge to the seller. But, you know, at the same time, you can keep working, keep kind of find middle grounds. And it's really important to have an advisor in the mix there, is oftentimes two legal teams can really get to one side of a deal and you may need someone to broach something in the middle.
Yeah, and I think oftentimes as an advisor, we play the voice of reason and come up with ideas and solutions to these impasses that are perceived impasses. I'm also very convinced that, you know, lawyers want to bring this all the way up to the last minute. They're kind of coded to do that. You know, usually lawyers have a pretty full caseload and, you know, they're busy. And that combined with the fact that, you know, they want a bill. I don't think that there's a, they add a lot of value, but at the same time, you know, they're programmed to bill. And the way they do that is by making sure that they're negotiating up until the close date, in the close time. And so it's not a disparaging remark about legal. It's just how the legal profession works. And you have to keep that in mind when you're, working through these items, because certainly if these, all the solutions, the agreements were done, you know, weeks beforehand, it would forego an opportunity for that, lawyer to, bill and or add value, from their perspective as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last thing I'll say on this comment is, if all of you are just starting to not like each other, that means your deal's probably going to close, and you're right about at closing time. So, you know, April's got a couple of days left, and you feel a little angst towards just about everyone in the process. That's a great, it's a bad feeling in the middle of the time, but it also means that the concessions that you're giving are ultimately going to win, get to a deal that gets done.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that, that's kind of what's on front of mind this week on deals that, for us, had, we had some that, you know, one in particular didn't occur due to some of these issues, and we have others that are getting done this week. So we're excited about that. Also, we're now going to pivot to kind of structuring a deal. Our topic about, you know, how do you structure a deal to enhance enterprise value and reduce risk as a buyer, and what are the trade-offs? So that you can understand, you know, what's what. When you think about structuring a deal, I'll kind of jump right in, Brian, you can add your commentary, but you know, you have price and terms, when you negotiate a transaction, and, price is generally aligned to the overall price that would be paid, for the business. And in the simplest view, you would pay cash for a deal and you would close, and then you would go, you know, either merge or acquire or hold it as a subsidiary and optimize that combination, that 1+1=3 combination. But there's other, you know, other objectives that may require you to change the structuring. And that may have to do with risk mitigation as a buyer, because you have concerns about either the quality of the contracts or your ability to quality of the cash flows, as we often say in the industry. Or there may be other reasons why you would want to have a, what we call a contingent payment. And those contingent payments oftentimes are called earnouts. However, you know, you should know that the most inexpensive way to buy a company is for all cash or all guaranteed consideration. And certainly by providing a risk-based gain share arrangement, usually that benefits the seller. It does reduce risk for the buyer, but it usually benefits the seller. As far as sort of the structuring deal options, Ryan, I don't know if you have any other thoughts about that.
I think it's, we work with many people each week that they kind of hear stories from their friends on both ways. And earnout, and it was the best thing in the world. And I heard, and then the next week was, I heard an earnout and it was terrible. I never did it, so never do that. And we have such a different experience in which, we see people that take incentive type programs over time. You can eventually get to a number. And the reason why this starts to become as important is, oftentimes when you look to go sell your business, you're going to have a point or a number in your mind that you're trying to achieve. And if you're working through revenue growth or profitability enhancements, sometimes that number is out of reach for buyers that have a particular multiple in mind. And the way to get around that is not all deal has to be upfront cash to to get a deal done. So I'd love to hear, Mike, about kind of if someone does have a number in their head, and the likelihood that a deal structure could change, and what are some ways that you could, what are some overview or deal structures that you've seen work? And perhaps we'll just kind of love to start with maybe just tell us that cash up front versus, it's perhaps some kind of earnout or an asset purchase or stock getting equity or stock in the deal. Kind of, what are some ways that you can start to get to that enterprise value at a higher rate?
Yeah, certainly. So if you, for example, are growing your business, growing it well, and you're in a top quartile growth kind of paradigm of your peers in the business and industry, and you're realizing good profit, oftentimes it's in your best interest to take a gain share, as I call it. If you're very confident in the ability of the business to continue to grow, and for example, you're going to stay on with the business, let's say you're going to stay on and run that business, and you can control that outcome, then in many ways, you're much better off taking a gain share type payment. And the reason that is certainly it's an accelerated sort of payout that you're, and it also makes it easier for the buyer to cash flow a deal. It also makes it easier for them to justify paying up because they're paying for that, or at least part of that payment, through your cash flows through that period. And certainly we've seen situations where people have had a very significant, as a seller, it's a very significant gain by staying on and by taking a gain share type payment. Some people call it an earnout. Or equity. Equity is another good opportunity, provided, particularly public equity. We've had clients that have been acquired into holding companies that have gone public, that have built tremendous value into their equity because they were significant equity holders in that scenario. They've been able to monetize it in ways that, wouldn't necessarily be otherwise available to them. Likewise, we've had people who, sold into private equity, where private equity typically invests and grows and builds a platform and then turns around and sells that a number of years later. And we've certainly initiated many of those type of transactions over the years that have benefited the sellers tremendously because they've held equity and they've continued to roll equity some through many private equity buyers. We've had one client that's been just sold into its third, got sold to a strategic, but was sold through three different private equity companies prior to going to strategic. And the people that have held equity and rolled it throughout all of those transactions certainly have benefited in a big way through the final acquisition by a public company. So these, combination of equity and cash and earnouts and can be complex and hard to understand. And it is very situationally specific, meaning you have to be able to evaluate the risks and benefits of each of those opportunities. And oftentimes those are very negotiable depending on the profile of the seller and the buyer, right? As to what is an earnout and what is a gain share. And, should we take a seller note, which is another way for, sellers to benefit yet get a guaranteed payment, or should we take a convertible debenture if it's a public company, but you're concerned about where that public stock will go as a value? But this is where advisors, like Revenue Rocket, kind of earn our keep. We can help you make sense of all of those various options in your situation if you're a seller or if you're a buyer. Certainly, there's trade-offs to all deal structures for buyers and sellers. And I think, an effective advisor is one that helps everybody find the right balance of those things in order to meet their mutual goals and benefit the organizations accordingly.
Yeah, I totally agree. Mike, can you give me an example of an ideal situation for a seller to entertain a gain share method for increasing the enterprise value?
I think, as I said before, you know, it's one thing if you're selling out, right? If you're selling out, we use these terms oftentimes, are you selling out or selling in? If you're an owner and you're selling out and you want to architect a strategy to get out reasonably quickly after close, and reasonably quickly could be anything from, you know, a month to a year, right? Just depends on the situation. Then it would probably benefit you to have your money out of the firm no later than the amount of time you're willing to commit to get out of the business. Now, this isn't always possible. You know, we're working on a transaction right now where there are three owners, one owner staying on and will be running the business, and two owners are leaving within 90 days. And those owners are agreeing to a portion of the consideration in a two-year earnout. They're doing that because they have ultimate confidence in the partner that is staying and their ability to achieve those goals. And that could be either a seller note or an earnout. It would, you know, the seller note is a little more, is a guaranteed instrument. So it's not quite as, it carries some risk, but not the same risk as an earnout. So I would just tell you that, you know, in that situation, it may be seen a little bit differently, but I think a lot of it has to do with, are you staying or are you going? And if you're staying, then, you know, 86% of the time, earnouts or gain share arrangements get paid out at or above their index value to the seller, which means that you have a very high likelihood not only of getting the money, but also getting a premium. And so I think if you're wanting to be part of a bigger organization, you're wanting to play a role where you can affect that outcome, particularly if, you know, 1 + 1 = 3 or 4, where you can get together a place that you can't get apart, then the likelihood you're going to benefit from a gain share type payment is, or an earnout is very, very high. And that's the best scenario for you to participate in one. Conversely, if you're exiting pretty quickly, you want to fortify that enterprise value through probably guaranteed consideration for the most part. And that could be either all cash or a combination of cash and selling out, but each situation is different. And I would just caution you to not jump to conclusions about, you know, it's got to be this way or that way. I think understanding the situation, seeking to understand and being flexible is probably the best way to get to a deal.
It's a great point, Mike. If you're looking at that structure, it sounds like it's an ideal if you have a company that's heavily valued on a discounted cash flow or essentially future earnings. So if you have kind of hockey stick growth, it's a let's prove it type methodology that would apply really well here. I am curious though, if are there certain things that you should not be basing a payment on, an equity payment or even a seller note? For example, do you want to base a earnout on a fungible item like net income?
Yeah, the answer is absolutely no, right? So we think you need to be as high as possible on the financial statement if you're going to base something on a gain share payment. Usually that's revenue, right? There's certain situations where gross margin can also apply. The challenge with net income, although it's been done and we've architected deals where net income is the variable, you have to try to define it in a way that will include all potential variables. And net income in many ways is fungible. Once you don't own the business, for example, a buyer could lever up or they could add costs, or they could add an allocation, a management allocation, which is sort of a common trick that some buyers try to apply after the deal's closed. And that puts downward pressure on the net income, which means you wouldn't get paid out in your earnout. Now, I would tell you that most buyers aren't bad actors. Most buyers don't go into a deal trying to cheat you. They do exist. So I don't want to say it's all sunshine and moonbeams out there, but, you know, certainly it is not a common practice that buyers have to try to cheat you. But you have to make sure that those definitions are very aligned accordingly and make sense. Otherwise, you could be in a situation where you had a surprise on an earnout not being paid out because things changed after the sale. We had a situation occur, or I should say we heard about a situation that occurred that way recently where someone indexed the earnout on net income and the management team completely turned over in the business. And the new management team, who had no history and no context for the transaction, actually added a management fee that gutted the EBITDA, primarily because the new leadership was trying to optimize EBITDA for their own comp plan. And they did not honor the spirit of the agreement. And the seller was kind of left holding the bag in that situation. And so, you know, there's things that can happen, situations that can happen where, you know, you want to protect yourself. And again, that's why when you think about, you have to be thinking about in a broad context, what could happen pursuant to the structure so that you can fortify the likelihood that you'll get to an earnout. The numbers I mentioned earlier about, you know, 86% of them get paid out and all that stuff, that is four earnouts that are designed properly. I just need to add that caveat. You can design them poorly. And a lot of people hear about those stories, right, of people who didn't get the earnout because they were designed poorly, aka they're designed in ways that are not measurable, which is also a common mistake. Because if your business is suddenly merged into another business and doesn't have a separate P&L, you can't really measure the outcome. very challenging to measure the outcome. So there's things that have to be thought about in order to put it together.
Absolutely, and that's where we make a lot of our value, or where we create value is helping understand what's possible in the art of a deal, especially when it comes to helping bridge the gap between what a buyer may see in the financials and what a seller expects in the business, and coming to it towards a favorable outcome, which is ultimately getting the deal done and a situation where everyone is happy with the deal, and deals that don't get done unless they're buyers and sellers are willing to get them done. And these are at least some great ways that you can bridge a gap between kind of future and expected, or current and expected earnings. Mike, that's kind of all the questions I got on got for today.
Yeah, sounds great. Well, it was thanks, Ryan. It was great having the conversation on our podcast today. And with that, I think we'll tie a ribbon on it. Encourage everyone to tune in next week when we're going to dive into other relevant topics as it relates to growth strategy and M&A in the IT services space. With that, have a great week.